I would trade him if I could.
I don't think many people liked it, to be honest. I don't care.
Last year didn't really do well for anybody.
We should probably delete all of this.
By the laws of the podcast gods, we owe an answer.
Reporting the Highline with Rabbi in Red. Talking the rapids and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car or in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the Highline.
Hello, schedule reading Rapids fans. You are listening to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. We are brought to you by Icarus FC and Roughneck Scarves. My name is Matt Pollard. It is Wednesday, June 24th, 2020, 104 days since MLS suspended the 2020 regular season, 14 days away till the start of the MLS's back Biodome, Thunderdome, or Land Doom tournament, and 18 days away from the Burgundy Boys opening up their Group D fixtures. I'm joined now by a man who cannot believe that the Arsenal has re-signed David Luiz after what he did against Manchester City, Rabbi Mark Goodman.
Oh, Arsenal. But at least Mainz 05 is seemingly staying up. So that's the good news. I guess that's we take our positives where we can here in the basement in Pittsburgh.
Well said. Mark, so you noticed before we started recording a particular jersey that I'm wearing. It says Rapid on it. It's green, but it's not what you're thinking, listeners.
Nice. Yeah. He got the Rapid Vienna kit, which is great. Rapid Vienna has some great history. It is one of those clubs that has intersection with the pre-World War II Jewish community also. So a sentimental club to me as well. So good yes. work.
And it's a two-tone solid green. They've gone more with like a green with the white mixed in the last couple of years that I haven't cared for as much, Mark. So this is one that I'm very, very glad that I got. So we're not sponsored by Away Days, but definitely shout out to Away Days Football. I was doing some research on them, actually, Mark, because I don't know much about the Austrian league other than the fact that Jesse March is the head coach at Red Bull Salzburg, who are marching towards a title. They're neck and neck with the standings with one other team that isn't Rapid. So possibility for a former MLS head coach to get a double this year as they won the Austrian Cup a couple of weeks ago. But so I was looking at them. They have a history of being a part of the working class, Mark. And then so they kind of have a really big class with Austria Vienna, which is the other big club in Austria that is like part of the city. It was originally like the plutocrats and the upper middle class. That's now been molded in the 100 years since the clubs have come into existence. But both have very, very large ultra representation. And the Rapid Vienna fans are still very much like dug in. We want to see effort. We want to see fight. They do not come to be entertained with pretty football. They want to see a gutsy defensive 1-0 win. They are a club that has historically played in a very defensive 4-4-2. They're a club that has, I think, won the most first divisions in the history of the Austrian Bundesliga, but have not won in over a decade, I believe. And then so last year, or a couple of years ago, Mark, they had an incident where they were playing in the derby against Austria Vienna, and they were losing 2-0 in the first half, and the fans just decide to invade the pitch. And so in response to that, Austria Vienna decides no away fans, there's no away section available for fans to come for the derby on the other side when Austria Vienna end up hosting it. And so basically what ends up happening after that is the Austria Vienna ultras decide to walk out of that game, and both of them separately show up at their practice games and basically have a bunch of flares. And then the last time, then in response to that, they were saying, okay, both of you can come back, but then there's no flares. And basically the Austria Vienna fans like had a ridiculous number, like human health hazard from an inhalation of smoke level flare production. And basically they wanted to ban them again. And now it's just like, anything that we do, you're just going to double down on it anyways. So I'm amazed that, like, imagine, Mark, if C38 does something and then isn't allowed to travel for the Rocky Mountain Cup against RSL. The RSL supporters then protest by having a flare massive game, and then they walk out of the game. And then both of the point that I'm getting at dear listeners, is I don't think there is another cross-city derby in the history of world football where the two ultras who hate each other, hate the opposing team, hate the culture and the history and the opposition of what their club has historically represented, but ultimately can come together around flares. Like, this is the Israelis and the Palestinians deciding, let's stop the war because we both like chickpeas.
That's a fair point. And I think I actually have often commented about the importance the Middle East could put on good hummus and good falafel as solving Middle East peace. I don't have as much to say about what could bring RSL and Colorado Rapids fans together. I don't think those fan bases are compatible in any way, shape, or form. Yes, we both like snow-capped mountains, but they call theirs the Wasatches, which are, let's be honest, they're just coming up with a Utah-fied name for the Rockies because we own the Rockies in Colorado. So, you know, like, that's it's hard to be from Utah. There's not as much to root for. There's not culture. There's not, I mean, you know, if we really want to dump on Utah, which, to be honest, I do, this is a state that stole a team from New Orleans in the NBA, which was called the New Orleans Jazz, which is a name that makes sense, and then said, you know what, we're not very creative, we're just going to keep the name the Utah Jazz, even though, correct me if I'm wrong, Matthew, I'm not aware that any jazz music has ever been produced from the state of Utah.
Not in a particularly high level, certainly not.
No. I know about Salt Lake Punk because there was a movie called Salt Lake City Punk, which I recall not being very good, but that has nothing to do with anything. All right.
Yeah.
Can we talk about soccer instead of rambling about?
Yeah.
You know,
so the point that I made there, Mark, is
what point were you making? Where is a point?
It's a very good, I think there are a lot of things that we value as members of the Rapids community, a lot of things that endear the Burgundy and Blue faithful to the Burgundy boys. We see a lot very, very similar in the green of Rapid Vienna. And I think if there were any, I do not think that if any of the young players currently on the Rapids who are remotely plausibly getting a significant transfer fee to go to Europe will go to the Austrian Bundesliga. But if randomly a player were to end up there, we talked about this a couple weeks ago of like, should we have other clubs that we're remotely aware of? We talk about Arsenal a lot on here because you're an Arsenal supporter, Mark, and that has a common connection in the ecosystem of Kroenke Sports Entertainment. We have talked about Dundee United in the connection to Dylan Powers. But if we were to have another connection from a former Rapids player to Rapid Vienna, I think that'd be a very seamless transition in terms of the club culture, the supporters culture, the type and style of play, the history of the club, and certainly one of the color that they wear historically and one of the colors that is thought of very fondly as a retro kit of the Colorado Rapids. Speaking of Rapids kits, Mark, we have not talked about this since it actually became official. A couple of weeks ago, folks, on June 14th, we officially had the winner of the HTHL vote for the best Rapids kit of all time. And Mark, it came down to the original, the electric blue. I was calling it the Colorado State flag blue of the 2013-14 season against the 2018 and 2019 burgundy and blue. And it was the burgundy and blue that ended up winning. Mark, your thoughts on Rapids fans on Twitter voting for the best kit in Rapids history and the fact that it is a burgundy kit with blue shorts?
I don't think it's a surprise. I feel like fans got down to the nitty gritty and were like, you know, we can't vote for the cool, hip, neat color over the actual burgundy that is like has become the classic, you know, iconic thing about the Colorado Rapids. I mean, I think if you stripped the team down and you asked fans, what is the essence of the Colorado Rapids? Like, what's the most important defining characteristic of the Rapids? You know, like, for some teams in some sports, you might actually pick a player, right? Like, it might be memorable. Like, if you pick the Chicago Bulls, you know, the logo, the colors, the city are not going to be the first thing. It's going to be Michael Jordan. You're going to talk about Michael Jordan, who transcended the team and will always be remembered like as the guy. You could make the same argument in Los Angeles with the, for the Lakers with like Magic Johnson, although Kobe Bryant gets a pretty good shout. But then there
rest in peace.
Nice. May his memory be for a blessing, as we say in my tradition. But there are other teams where, the kit is probably more, or the logo is probably more memorable. Like, I think like the Toronto Raptors, if I were talking NBA still, I think their logo is more memorable than any player or any game or any season they've ever had. With the Yankees, you could make an argument that it's Yankee pinstripes. I mean, there's so many amazing Yankee players. You can't really say like, Gehrig, Mantle, Jeter, Ruth, like, it's the pinstripes. The pinstripes dominate. So for the Rapids, it's very similar in the sense that like the color that came to define the team is burgundy. And there's something about our burgundy. I think the interesting question, which I'll throw back at you, is there were a number of burgundy kits in the 16 that you picked. And I was kind of interested as to why the 18-19 season?
Correct.
Why that one was the one that went ahead. I mean, maybe because it was pretty slick. It was cool. It was a very solid burgundy with some nice accent colors. There have been some other years. My favorite burgundy kit from the thing was I think like 2013, where it had white sleeves that started at the shoulder. There's other kits that we've had that were burgundy that were pretty good. So why that burgundy above all other burgundies?
Well, I think, first of all, Mark, I think certainly – I think we talked about this when the kit actually came out because this would have been in the infancy of this podcast. This is the first real jersey that's made a big deal out of the Rapids technically secondary color in the actual blue. All of the other iterations that we had, the color that we saw, the next most represented color after the burgundy, which took up the majority of the shirt, was actually white. And so I think at least in talking to other people around MLS, there was actually confusion sometimes when I would bring up burgundy and blue and it's like, no, it's burgundy and white. There were a significant number of people in other MLS cities who passively pay attention to the Rapids who thought that the Rapids secondary color was actually white because the scarves that we see for the season ticket holders are the burgundy and white bar stripe scarves. And then their secondary color that they had on their jerseys was actually white. So I think actually touching on, technically in their nickname, in their colors, in the crest, the blue part of the burgundy and blue was something. I think a lot of the burgundy kits that we saw were also not necessarily some of the ones that got voted down the quickest. And maybe I'm building an argument where there isn't there because, we didn't have, questionnaires of why did you pick this jersey over another is the question of, do you remember that jersey because it was iconic for a moment? The 2016 burgundy shirt, I think it was the 2016 one that had the blue and the burgundy or the blue and the white stripes on it. And then the season ticket holder numbered jerseys. Those are the final two burgundy jerseys to get eliminated. And this one obviously being the winner and the final one to advance. And so I'm wondering if that's a reason, the one that kind of had the Colorado C into it for 2013 was really cool. But as we'll remember, and as we've talked about, that jersey was kind of maligned midway through the season with the Chow logo that kind of, took up all of that space. So I think the fact that it's a relatively simple jersey that I think in that represents that the club's not here to be flashy. They're here to work hard. These are jerseys that are going to get mud and grass stains on them, and they will be able to be washed out. One that accentuates the secondary color of the club very well. And then I think also has a sponsorship logo that blends in with the jersey really well. We've seen over the course of the last number of years, Mark, jerseys that, like the jerseys, the Manchester United look and everything that they represent is fine from an aesthetic pleasing level, but that Chevy chevron on the front of it just completely smears and absolutely ruins it. And I could point out a bunch of those around as well that have just been absolutely abhorrent. And the fact that like the Transamerica, it's simple, It's white. It goes in the rest of it. It's the same type font. It doesn't take up, it doesn't consume, not consume all the oxygen, but it doesn't, your eyes aren't immediately drawn to it, and it doesn't consume all of the fabric of the jersey. Is nice as well. I think the one thing that I thought was kind of interesting about it, Mark, is like, this is the Anthony Hudson era jersey. Like, this kit was, like, the Rapids were not good in wearing this jersey at all. I guess, you know, we could say, if we're thinking about it in the context of last season and almost winning the playoffs, and that's the first jersey that they wore when Robin Fraser was the manager and everything, and obviously that was the one they wore for the entirety of Connor Casey's caretaker duration with the club. But that's something that also amazed me. You know, I would, listeners at Rapids 96 podcast, if you did indeed vote for this jersey, please tell us why. What was it that drew you to us, drew you to it over some of the other kits that it was represented by? And if you disagree, if you do not like this jersey, send us a photo of the jersey that you thought was your favorite in the history of the Colorado Rapids and why it is, why it was so significant to you, either for aesthetic purposes, emotional reasoning, it was the first kit you got, et cetera, et cetera. Any other thoughts, Mark, or shall we get on to the actual soccering?
We should. I mean, there is, you know, we skipped last week because it was, we literally off pod. We were like, I think the text messages between me and Matt were, should we talk this week? And if so, what the heck would we talk about? And the answer was, let's just take the week off, because we also hope to, I'm not making any promises, but we hope to deliver, you know, episodes, maybe two episodes during the tournament, a week. So that, we can do a pregame and a postgame of both of the Rapids games, which are going to occur. One game will be on a Sunday and one will be on a Friday. So it'll be a little bit tight, like an Arsenal shirt. All right, Matt, you break down the news of the day, which is pretty much a big, big shocker. And Matt and I were discussing whether, you know, if there was a, whether we should call it a DEFCON meter or a Paul Gutta depth meter. Paul Gutta depth meter, for those of you who are not old school Burgundy Wave fans, Chris White, the first founding editor of Burgundy Wave, discussed when the Rapids were really, really bad, around like 2009, 2011, you know, what is the level of depth that it would cause for the team to pull a player like Scott Paul Gutta, a marginal replacement level player, off the bench and have him actually start games for the Rapids? So the Paul Gutta depth meter is how bad is your team at any given position? So, sorry, with that long-winded explanation, the question is now, if the Rapids have a number of players test positive for COVID, how bad are things going to get, Matt? And so now, with all that to ruin everything, would you please break down the news of the day?
So a bunch of players in American soccer have tested positive for SARS-CoV-2, COVID-19. The Colorado Rapids confirmed earlier today, Wednesday, at time of recording, that they did have a player test positive. This is the first that I am aware of, Mark. We have had other people within the organization who were not technical, not front office, not players or interacting with the players test positive. Back in April, Robin Fraser said that he wasn't aware of anybody who had tested positive. So this is the first public occasion we have of a player or coaching staff or technical staff testing positive. And this comes in the aftermath of an Inter Miami player testing positive. Last week, we had two Atlanta United players who tested positive, one on Wednesday and another was confirmed on Friday. We should note that Atlanta United did have, did do retesting after that. Both of those players were in isolation by the time their results had come back, and the rest of the staff had had all negative tests. And now it's Wednesday, so presumably they've had another round of tests and haven't gotten anything positive. And this all comes, Mark, after the, I was joking, I don't have a good Norwich City joke to make in here, folks, but the canary in the coal mine is that there's an entire NWSL team that's not going to be playing in the NWSL Challenge Cup in the aforementioned Wasatch Mountains because Orlando Pride had 10 positive tests while they were still in market because a bunch of younger players decided to go to a bar over the weekend and infected other team and technical staff. And basically the club said, it's not worth it. So at this point now, Mark, that like there were teams that Orlando Pride were supposed to play. They're having to rework their schedule and everything. And for those of you who weren't paying attention to the NWSL calendar and the Challenge Cup, the NWSL has 9 teams. They were going to do a group stage that was really just going to be eliminating one team in order to then have the 8-team knockout round in a proper bracket. I'm kind of wondering at this point, Mark, do you not break it up into 2 groups of 4, have everybody play each other twice, and then have like a semifinals and then a finals at this point? Like the whole joke when the schedule came out was NWSL fans. Oh, go ahead, Mark.
Oh, I was just going to say that they already reformatted the schedule.
Okay.
Look at it. I didn't look at it carefully, but I'm sure they did basically exactly what you said, which is they're going to keep things going. But clearly, maybe the first whole group round of everybody playing is just for seeding because there are so few teams. I think it leads to one of the questions I have both about the NWSL tournament and the MLS tournament is that. Both leagues basically said, well, we're going to have a tournament and then we'll go from there. And I think there are questions which we're not really going to kind of get into because we have so much other stuff to deal with the question of how COVID affects tournaments and teams and soccer and sports in America in general, which is what happens after these tournaments? Because I think MLS's plan was we're going to go into a season. NWSL's was also to go into a season, but as of today we have the second highest number of new cases in America since the entire COVID outbreak began.
And Florida's surging. Like Florida, this isn't a second wave. Florida's first wave never ended. And the NBA and MLS are potentially going into the belly of the beast.
Yes. I think you can argue that for a lot of the country, I don't think there ever was an end to the first wave. But basically, like, 30,000, 32,000 new cases was the record in April. And today we hit 30,000 new cases yesterday was disclosed today. So we're trending in the wrong direction. And the states that are specifically trending in the wrong direction are California, Arizona, Texas, and Florida. Utah's also not doing very well. You said it well with MLS headed towards a place that has a lot of COVID. An article I saw online, I think it was probably at MLSsoccer.com, but it might have just been a comment off of it, was the argument is being made that the players, as you were joking, are going to be in a bubble, right? They're going to be kind of hermetically sealed inside the ESPN Wide World of Sports complex where players and staff will avoid other people. But I think that somebody forgot how things work in our country right now with transmission rates and all these problems, which is somebody has to bring the food to the hotel. Someone has to clean the linens at the hotel. Someone has to mow the grass at the ESPN Center. Somebody has to serve the meals to the players. Somebody has to bring the camera equipment to and from the equipment suppliers, and somebody has to operate the cameras. Somebody has to run the trucks, yada, yada, yada. My point being, there are lots of people coming in and out of the ESPN Wide World of Soccer, Wide World of Sports, complex. And I'm sure they're being tested. I'm sure some of them are being careful. I'm sure some of them are not, right? Like, the whole story in America of COVID-19 is some people are trying really hard to obey the rules and be careful, and some people are not. And some of those people are professional soccer players, as you mentioned with the Orlando situation. If you go to a great article, the Athletic's article on it by Meg Linehan, who's a phenomenal writer, one of the best soccer writers in America right now, Meg was the person who found the sources inside the club who disclosed off, without disclosing their own names, that a bunch of players went to a bar. And that kind of that is both something that young people do, which is, you know, push the boundaries and have fun and, you know, eventually react to 4 months of being stuck in your house by trying to be social with your friends. And also the kind of thing that's unbelievably ridiculously dumb and irresponsible, right? I remember I'll tell a semi-related story. When I, my congregation in Erie, Pennsylvania, where I'm the rabbi, we had a member pass away. And the funeral director, it was going to be one of these COVID-19 distanced funerals where someone was basically going to record it on a cell phone and then send it out afterwards. And I told the president of the congregation, right, okay, I'll come up and I'll be happy to do the service, because we have a funeral director who can also lead the service. And her response to me was, oh, no, we don't want you to come up. Because if you come up and you interact with the funeral director and you interact with the family and you interact with the mortuary and you interact with two or three other people and you get sick, you have kids and they need you. And we don't want to expose you to the risk. So I would make, to some degree, that same argument with the Orlando players who decided, I'm going to go out to a bar and have a couple drinks with some friends. Never mind the fact that there are three new moms on my team, who are, you know, raising an infant. And it's a pretty, I mean, I don't mean to be critical, because I think there are legitimate reasons why people, you know, accidentally contract this thing. But like, there's also being cautious and there's also doing what's in the best interest of your team. Now, all of this, I'm going on and on and on. But I'll kick it back to you in a second, Matt. All of this sheds some or no light on the Rapid situation, which is a player contracted COVID. We have no idea if there's any circumstances by which that person made poor decisions that rendered them culpable in this. I think it's unfair in general in America today, or in any country, to say you did X and that exposed you to risk and you shouldn't have done that and blah, blah, blah. There's just no way of knowing. What I do know is this. The immediate reaction is, well, it's only one player, right? Well, the Rapids had to cancel training for the foreseeable future because they can't have live training with other players coming into contact with each other, because the one player who tested positive was in physical proximity to all the other 25, 26, 27 players on the team. Any one of them could have asymptomatically contracted COVID, and they won't have enough antibodies in their system for it to register for a couple more days. So we don't know whether the Rapids dodged a proverbial bullet and only one player tests positive and only one player gets kicked out of this tournament, or whether in a couple days we find out that six players are now testing positive and they all have to go into isolation for 14 days. And then 4 days later, we find out that 10 more players test positive. And all of a sudden, the Rapids, who were hoping at the fans were at the very least hoping we were going to get three damn games out of this season, right? We're going to watch the Rapids three more times at the very least, right? It's entirely possible that we could be the Orlando Pride of the MLS's back tournament, meaning we could be the team that caught the virus at the wrong time with too many people, and ultimately we'll have to forfeit. Matt?
So there's a couple points here. We have not heard at this point that any other Atlanta United player has tested positive. They came out with a press release, and then Felipe I'm going to totally butcher this last name, Mark.
Cardenas.
Okay, Cardenas. He also writes for The Athletic. He came out with a good details on the actual protocol that they followed as well. So I think one thing that we do have to note is that if you follow is that there are protocols in place to keep you safe to a reasonable extent. There are protocols in place, the league, the clubs, local health officials have put in place such that when one of these players or somebody else at the club does test positive, they are able to account for that, not spread it to anybody else, and that the rest of the organization can, at some reasonable time after that, without those positive test players, continue activities, and then that player 14, 16, however many days and however many positive however many tests that come back negative to confirm, are able to resume activity. So we've seen to an extent within that with Atlanta United that's happened. Philadelphia Union, I think a couple months ago back had a player who tested positive. So there are protocols in place. Now, the NWSL and Orlando Pride did have a rule that that players and staff should be isolating up to the week prior to the tournament that obviously those players did not do. And so I don't know if some form of punishment should come about of that, but they didn't follow the protocol. You don't really have an excuse when you don't follow the protocol. And so that's something that I think has to be driven home on that stuff, that there are elements that you absolutely can control, and maybe it's not your fault. I think as Jurgen Klopp put it in his first speech to the club when Liverpool were going into isolation, said, the first person who tests positive is not an idiot. We should not make fun of or malign them. But you can do things that are in your control. So to the, I guess the me clapping back to Bill Hamid's Twitter post or Instagram post from a couple weeks ago, Mark, listeners. Bill Hamid, goalkeeper with DC United, recent member of the now formed MLS Black Players Coalition, came out with a post basically saying, I'm an adult, you shouldn't be locking me down, we don't have a secure bubble in Orlando anyways because of the employees and other staff that will be taking care of us. Give me a mask, give me PPE, trust, and I'm going to be adult. Bill and anybody else who's thinking about this, this is why we don't want you wandering into the wild blue yonder that is the native habitat of Florida Man in the greater Orlando area of a major metropolis and everything. So that's why we don't have that. And so at this point, Mark, to your point, like, there is a question now of if this tournament goes through in some part, are we not going to have not a war of attrition, but maybe a war of contagion, where now, if we talk about somebody getting to Orlando and then testing positive, basically they have to be stuck in their hotel. I don't know if the players are going to have all of their own hotel rooms, but basically that guy's out of commission. And if they get that in the first week of the group stage, between testing through quarantine, getting back their fitness, not being able to go outside and everything, just being stuck in their hotel room for 2 weeks, how much longer is that going to be for them to get back to their fitness? If a guy tests positive the night before your first game of the group stage, he's probably out until you get your final. So we might as well at this point, Mark, be prepping ourselves for an injury list. So there should be the long-term injury list that we already have for the Rapids between, you know, Courtney Ford and Sebastian Anderson. We should have another column in there for all of the soft muscle, soft tissue injuries that we're going to see that we've seen in the Bundesliga, we've seen in the Premier League, just because players are coming back and they're not fit and they're going to have to play every 5 days. And we should have another column of, did you test positive for coronavirus? And I think that, like, at some point, this tournament is going to become a war of contagion, or just a battle of, can you not get sick? Can you not randomly have the things that you can't control? Have you test positive to the point where you're unavailable to your team? And what does this say about depth of the squad and roster and availability? I was talking to a hockey friend a couple of weeks ago, Mark, and so the NHL is in phase two, about to transition into phase three of their return to play. The plan is four phases. Phase four is actually them doing a bunch of host cities similar to MLS. And right now they're going to have two main host cities, one for the Eastern Conference teams and their playoff bracket, one for the Western Conference teams. And they've got an initial tentative plan to reduce that down, where the other teams would come to one of those cities for the conference finals and the finals. And so one of the cities that are looking at is Las Vegas. They've got the facilities. Obviously, it's going to be very, very hot, but the particular resorts that they're looking at for housing the players, the employees are all unionized. The employees, both from ESPN, are unionized, and for the, I think, the Dolphin, whatever, and resort that MLS is looking at are also unionized. That union in Orlando has basically said, like, full stop, we're not quarantining. We're not joining the bubble in order for you guys to host this tournament. The couple of the sites that the NHL is looking at in Vegas, those unions have agreed to it. So effectively, all of the employees are in the bubble. They've got larger hotel rooms. I don't know if they're compensating them more, but like somebody who's a front desk person, somebody who's maintaining the pool or what have you, or the little golf area that they have inside of the restaurant, inside the resort, their families are coming with them, or maybe they're not. They're going to stay inside the bubble for the duration of the NHL tournament. So the only time that you're going outside is with the bus driver, who's also a part of the bubble, to drive you to the practice facility, which is bubbleized, and the arenas, which are also secure as well. And that includes the media staff who are actually covering things. That includes the employees, all of the medical staff, all of the team staff, league officials, etc. And so that's something that we don't have. That's the area where we can't control. Where what if one of the people who's the sanitation workers, ends up getting coronavirus and is asymptomatic and cleans, and while asymptomatic between whatever their test period is, cleans the floor of the hotel that is entirely the Colorado Rapids room and all of the Colorado Rapids players. And then like 10 or 12, like, what's the number? It was 10 for Orlando Pride. Like, at what point does Robin Fraser and Porrick Smith just be like, okay, MLS, we forfeit? Like,
right.
And
so I want to say two things. One is based on a little bit of, I wrote about a little bit for the Pittsburgh Soccer Now website that I write for, because USL is also undergoing the same thing. It's just a week behind. So I kind of covered, you know, what is NWSL going through? What is MLS going through? And then what is USL expecting? USL, by the way, not having a tournament. USL just decided today to go to 16 games. And they're geographically slicing and dicing the whole league up into, I think, 10 different groups. Sorry, 8 different groups, Matt says. Matt's really paying attention. So the teams will have the minimum amount of travel, which I assume is just a financial consideration more than anything else. If also because you can put those dudes on buses. And that's safer than taking them through major airports, like, say, I don't know, hypothetically, the Orlando airport, which may or may not be a COVID-free zone. So 2 points. One is off of what you said about Bill Hamid. I think it's easy to criticize Bill Hamid and say, you know, you're a highly paid professional. We haven't had soccer for months. Suck it up, Buttercup. Get up, do the tough job and get out there on the field. But I do want to give the athletes some credit. I think a number of prominent NWSL players have said, I'm not playing in the tournament. Carly Lloyd.
Kristen Press. Megan Rapinoe.
Tobin Heath.
Like a significant number of the World Cup champion 2019 team.
Yeah, and I think it's a twofold statement on them. One is, to be blunt, I make enough money and I'm high profile enough that I can skip my miserable NWSL paycheck because the risk is too high. The second piece is a little bit less monetary and blunt and a little bit more human in the sense that this is a real disease. People die from it. And this is a sport where minimizing risk of exposure is impossible, right? There's 22 people on a field grinding, getting close, breathing on each other, sweating on each other. There's only a few ways of minimizing the risk, plus the staff they come in contact with, plus all the people who deliver their linens and cut the grass and operate the cameras. So I want to be sympathetic to people like Bill Hamid in a different direction from the way Hamid put it. Hamid said, we're not children, stop infantilizing us. But for Rapinoe, it's more like, this is dangerous, and I'd rather not risk my life for the money, which is a legitimate point. The second related legitimate point off of all this, I want to correct myself because the latest data is in, or I didn't see this tweet until just now, which is, according to a report online, which I'm sure will be corroborated by the New York Times tomorrow because it's based on every county in America reporting data, June 24th was the highest recorded number of positive COVID cases in America, 38,672. It is a completely legitimate question to ask the question, is this really a good idea altogether? I mean, leaving aside Florida, just the fact that a couple weeks ago we decided to open up, major league teams decided to figure out how to do it, and we're still doing it. We're doing it as safe as we can. We're doing it in a way that minimizes risk. We're also doing it basically at a time when the amount of cases is exploding and there is no way of avoiding it, right? I'll make an illusion, right? You can wear all the body armor you want. You can armor up your Humvee, but there's a big difference between driving into a city where there's no bad guys and nobody's shooting at you versus driving into a city where they're dropping howitzer shells on you and B-52s are dropping bombs out of the sky. Like, you're entering into a free fire zone. That's where we're at in America with COVID, which is you should minimize your risk. You should wear a mask. You should take precautions. But if the number of cases goes up and up and up every day, we are likely to be in a situation where the safest thing you can do, and I hate to say it because none of us want to do it, is go back into quarantine.
Yeah, no, I think to your point, Mark, if we're having this banter back about, you know, us talking about what Bill Hamid said or talking about Bill Hamid as if he was in the room having this conversation with us, is the all of this, like, if we were to go to a flow chart of questions that we should be asking, if Bill Hamid's bringing up his point and that poses both of us to bring up questions, the, like, if we go to the question before that to the top of the flow chart of the first question, yes or no, that question is, should we be having a tournament in Orlando with all of the MLS teams in there in a non-secure bubble? And my answer to that question to this point is probably no. We're rolling some serious dice here that have massive implications as far as the finances of this league, the future potential and injury of these players, and God forbid one of these players gets sick and something happens to them medically or somebody who they absolutely care
it
about at this point.
It would be smarter, Matt, to build an island off the coast of the United States and fly the whole team there for the games and put them on boats. You know, like, look, you guys are living on that fishing boat over there. That's where you're living. You don't like it? Tough. Don't play soccer, right? The rest of us are stuck in our houses. So, you know, live on the fishing boat and play soccer on those seven dinghies we tied together with a soccer field on top of it, right? Like, you know,
there is a floating soccer pitch at a stadium in Singapore.
I remember seeing that. I thought, you know, like, there's got to be a couple of tanker ships out there that are not being used right now. Just clear off the decks, lay down some tarp, play some soccer on them. But, you know, I'm sure there are logical reasons why, for instance, putting all of MLS on a cruise ship is probably a bad idea. But that being said, like, We're all, I think one of the things is we all bought into the idea, oh, sure, you know, a tournament in Orlando with lots of careful precautions and testing and so on. That seems like a well thought out, conceived and executed plan. And we're only a couple weeks into after the tournament being announced. And we're all looking at this like, my God, this is looking like a really bad idea every day. Now, all this said, Matt and I have been the prophets of doom.
Yes.
The Orlando.
Orlando.
Orlando tournament. We have been the prophets of doom for the last 15 minutes on this podcast. Don't misunderstand us, dear listeners. We are not in favor of catastrophe, right? Chaos is not a ladder in my world. I never watched Game of Thrones, and I do not believe that we should have a world where, you know, me and Matt complain bitterly on our podcast about how bad an idea this is, so that 4 weeks from now, when it turns into a poop show, we can then say, I told you so. No, I don't think so. I think Matt and I are both the kind of people who are...
We desperately are hoping we're wrong.
We're braced for the worst, and we are hoping for the best. We are both thinking to ourselves, like, okay, like, we're a little afraid right now at all the positive COVID tests, but what we really, really want is A, to see soccer, B, for the league to carry out these protocols really, really well, and to prove everybody wrong, and to prove that, you know, you can, that a whole bunch of professional athletes can be mature and thoughtful and exceedingly careful and take their jobs and the profession and the sport and elevate it to a high level. That being said, like, you know, we have a lot of concerns and we're nervous. And we also want to make sure that sport is, and now I'm being high-minded and almost rabbinic in nature, that sport is an exemplar for society at large, right? So if sport is meant to be an opportunity to release us from the shackles of the mundanity that is our boring lives, then it should elevate us and be wonderful and thoughtful and careful in that act. And at the same time, sport has a duty in America to be an accurate and thoughtful reflection of what the best thing to do is, right? There's a reason all of American sports leagues shut down after 9/11, and it wasn't just because the teams couldn't fly there. It's because nobody in America give a fig about Major League Baseball on September 12th, right? Nobody cared. We needed, as an America, to kind of heal. And then, on like September 15th or 16th or whenever it was, we needed the chaplain from the police department in New York City to sing God Bless America in the seventh inning. We needed that as a country. So we need soccer to come back as a country, but we also need soccer to represent for all of us in America and display and exemplify what it is to be responsible and what it is to take the sanctity of life and health and communities seriously. And that might include, and I hate saying this, looking down the barrel of a bad situation and saying, this is a bad idea. This is bad for the health of our players. This endangers, this makes Americans think that it's safe to go outside and do normal things when the reality is it's not. And that's, I think, a difficult balance to weigh. On top of that is the money. So, and back to you, Matt.
Last 3 points that I have, and then we can actually talk about the group now that we have a schedule and we know who the Rapids are playing and when, Mark. First Sweet two one. Things that I just want to quick back check on.
Too much
on
time on that though, too, Matt, because we still got show to fill in a week or two.
We're hopefully going to have some guests to actually preview the individual games, and obviously starting with the non-Rocky Mountain Cup, Rocky Mountain Cup opener. two quick fact checks here, Mark. As far as I know, the NWSL was allowing players to voluntarily opt out of the tournament for any reason or no reason at all, with no form of financial punishment. So to your point of that, so that might have been maybe a little bit misunderstood in what you said about players saying that, oh, like, I have to go to the tournament because I need the money. That's not the case with the NWSL. MLS came out with a list of possible reasons, medical conditions, valid reasons why you could choose to opt out of the tournament for human health concerns. David Villa, as we know, Carlos Vela, as we know, his wife is in the third trimester with their child, and he's opting out because of that reasons. I don't know if Jordan Morris is or isn't going, but being a diabetic, that would also qualify. Players can also choose to voluntarily opt out, but there would be some form of a punishment that MLS didn't really clarify what that is, and we haven't heard a case of a player who's chosen to do that and then has come out with what their punishment or fine or, I don't know, community service would have come up with that. And so the last thing that I'll say on this, Mark, there's obviously, for the players and the clubs, they're having to deal with this. There's going to have to be a point where if a certain number of positive tests come up for a club, they have to bow out, similar to what happened with Orlando Pride. But I mean, you know, we don't really have like a Zlatan, David Beckham character level player at this point. I would say Carlos Vela would be that, but he's not participating in this tournament. But, you know, the doomsday scenario is you get to the final, everything's been remotely good, but then like the three star players on the two teams in the finals, like let's say it's, I don't know, Portland Timbers taking on Toronto FC, for example. And the night before the tournament, the night before the final, they have the final tests and everything. And Diego Valeri and Josie Altidore and Michael Bradley all test positive. Like, what do you do at that point? And so that's that's again a scenario that we have to prep ourselves for. And I'm fine if we get to that point and there's already been positive tests. I mean, I'm really glad I'm not the commissioner of Major League Soccer at this point, Mark, because, you know, the decisions that Don Garber and company have had to make the last couple of months have not, none of them have been good. They've all been varying degrees of bad, and which poison you ultimately want to choose. But I mean, if this thing happens and it ends up being the doom that you and I have been talking about for the last 20 minutes on this show, Don Garber and the hire, they are going to get raked through the coals for this. And so so now let's actually talk about the group, assuming everything's going to be fine and the games are actually going to happen, shall we, Mark?
Nice. Let's turn to back to our hopefulness, the best case scenario. So let's start us off. The group, for the reminder, I'll say it, Matt, you'll tell us the schedule, but I think I know the order nonetheless, because I glanced at my phone and the it's not a very big group and it's not a very long tournament for the first group stage. So the Rapids open on July 12th, which is a Sunday, and it's an afternoon game, I believe, and they play our Rocky Mountain Cup rivals, RSL. It will be interesting to see whether the folks who are the holders of the Rocky Mountain Cup, which is C38 and the Riot Squad, I think, in RSL as to whether they will count it as a...
They have already voted as a committee, Mark. No RSL Colorado games in Orlando will count towards the 2020 Rocky Mountain Cup.
Unacceptable. I dissent, but I, of course, I haven't paid my membership to C38 in a couple of years, so I'm not really. So that's the first game. The second game is against Sporting Kansas City, the Spork. And that third match will be against Minnesota United, the Loons. It's an interesting group, Matt. Who do you think, if you were just going to say knee-jerk reaction, who's the odds-on favorite in the group, you know, right now?
So first off, I'll add a couple of other details, Marco. We know for a fact we have the broadcast schedule for this, and all six group stage games, both Rapids and non-Rapids, will all take place on ESPN. So if you have access to ESPN by whatever mechanism, folks, you don't have to worry about Don't Block My Altitude. You don't have to worry about the feuding between Fox and ESPN. All this stuff is going to be on the Worldwide Leader, and the Rapids all have evening games. Their first game against RSL will be at 8:30 Mountain Time on that Sunday, and then it'll be 6 p.m. against Sporting Kansas City on the Friday. And the final game that they have will actually have RSL versus Kansas City in the morning. They'll have one of the very few 7 a.m. Mountain Time games. And the Rapids will be, calendar-wise, the last game of the group stage, taking on the Loons at 8:30 that night. So I know we've seen this in World Cup games, Mark, where, you know, we have to have the final two games have to happen on the same date at the same time, so nobody has an advantage. The Rapids could potentially be an advantage knowing where everybody else stands and what result they may or may not need against Icopara and Minnesota United in that game. And so all of these games are 4 days apart as well, folks. So for those wondering about the rehab and everything, the Rapids will have, you know, certainly a reasonable amount of time by this tournament standpoint, in terms of healing, rehab, whatever else needs to happen, and certainly training activities with all their games happening pretty late at night. I'd probably, to the group itself, Mark, I'd probably echo what Robin Fraser said on the last conference call we had with Rapids Media when Tom Bogart straight up asked him, you know, are you guys in the group of death? And he said, you know, he thinks that it's tough but fair. When I look at groups of death in past tournaments, it usually has the same makeup. We've got usually one of the favorites from one of the serious contenders, then one of the next dark horses, and then a really, really good third team. So I'm with, I'd say, the majority of the MLS community in saying group F, that is the LAs, Houston, and Portland, is the group of death, even without Carlos Vela. But I think I look at this group and I don't see a distinct team that is definitively the worst. I don't see one that is definitively the best, Mark. We could, you know, future both of us could jump out of a time portal from the future and say, hey, Matt, the Rapids are going to finish fourth. And I'm like, yeah, I could see that. That's plausible. And I could see the Rapids are going to win all three of their games and they're going to finish first in the group. I'm like, yeah, I could see that. I don't know that either of those two are likely, but, you know, I think it's ultimately going to come down to that first game, like we see in a lot of groups, especially where it's tough, like for the U.S. in the 2014 World Cup, winning that first game against Ghana was critical. I would say that Real Salt Lake is the weakest of these teams just because of the lack of continuity that they have in terms of Freddy Juarez being a first-time head coach. There's a little bit of question in terms of what's going on with their attack, with the players that they have and everything. Obviously, no Nick Raimondo, so there's a good question, you know, do we see former Colorado Rapid Zach McMath in at goal in this position, and what does that look like? And especially with these games happening in the Orlando humidity, not proper training, and potentially muscle issues as well, what does that mean for Kyle Beckman sort of locking things out defensively and everything for Real Salt Lake? So I think that first game is going to absolutely be critical, and I think conveniently, the Rapids are playing an opponent that they are not going to take seriously because of the rivalry there with Real Salt Lake. And they're also playing a team who I think is the weakest in that compared to some of the attacking and certainly the defensive stalwartness that you would have from Minnesota United. And I mean, this tournament in terms of like fitness being absolutely the key and being able to rotate your veteran squads and just no nonsense veteran guys leading some of the younger guys. Like this is a tournament, like if I were to build a tournament of MLS teams, how do we design something such that Peter Vermees and his squad is absolutely going to thrive in it? This would probably be similar to the format. Maybe not having them play in the heat and humidity in Orlando as opposed to, you know, maybe a little bit further up north, closer to Sporting Kansas City. So I think it's an overall fair group. I think that first game is absolutely going to be critical for the Rapids. But as we've kind of seen from a number of national outlets, Mark, that have been gradually bringing up the Rapids as a dark horse for this, I think from a tactical standpoint, just with all of this stuff being such an unknown and where guys' fitness, where guys from an injury standpoint have unnamed players who we don't know tested positive for COVID-19, who's not coming, like trying to handicap this thing is going to be near impossible in that regard. And I think in that, a team that can just go in, be really, really fit, rotate through a couple of key guys at some critical positions, play really lockdown defense, counterattack well and set pieces. Like, this is something that the current state of the Colorado Rapids and Ben Olsen should be able to dunk on to at least get to the knockout rounds. Mark, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think you said it well. I don't agree about, who the weakest team in the group is. I think it's Minnesota. Looking at Minnesota's roster, I'm just literally not familiar with their strikers. Like, they signed Aaron Schoenfeld, who was playing on and off. He was really kind of a 75th minute sub, in the Israeli league, which is called Ligat Ha'al, the Israeli Premier League, for one of the better teams, the second best team in Tel Aviv. And after that, it's a really fairly unknown. It's like Ozzy Alonso and Ike Opara and a bunch of guys who are giant question marks. So I have real questions about whether Minnesota is fit to play and is going to be any good either. Sporting Kansas City, I think, is an interesting question also on some level, which is they were so bad last year and their specific problem was basically in letting Ike Opara leave, and that not filling that center back hole very well. And it kind of meant that the whole team unraveled. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, they also have one of their, primary midfielders had a season.
Felipe Gutierrez, yeah. Knee injury, out 6 to 9 months. He's out for the tournament, Mark. But, Alan Polito's, I have one of my buddies, Daniel Sperry, who's a co-editor at Last Word on Soccer. There's no other key injuries there. The rest of the crew from that standpoint should be good to go. But I think certainly if we're known injuries to key players in terms of this group, Felipe Gutierrez is certainly the biggest of them.
Right. You also can't sleep with RSL on Albert Rusnak, who is always trouble and is exceedingly talented. So, you know, I feel like there are reasons to say that I mean, I'm not going to go so far as to say RSL are the favorites in the group because this is a Colorado Rapids podcast. That would be popularity suicide for me. And you know me, I'd rather be popular than tell the truth. I'd rather lie to you Rapids fans about our chances. But I think you're right. Until this latest wrinkle of the Rapids not being allowed to practice together as a team, I think that the Rapids were the odds-on favorite. I think that is really the fundamental, deepest question for this team. How will they respond to kind of some of the COVID layoffs that are going to happen? What a challenge for Robin Fraser. And I honestly, you know, they've just released also today, MLS released a little bit of media information about how, media will be allowed to, you know, kind of work at the tournament, and work at the tournament is a pretty, loose
phrase
understanding. I don't know, you know, we're going to be let in on some roundtable calls, you know, pregame and postgame. Other than that, it's probably going to be the club flax asking questions and then sending the results to the rest of us, which we can or cannot use.
Yeah, I can, speaking as someone who's been in a lot of these, Mark, a lot of those questions are going to have zero actual insight and detail and functionally useless from a writing and using quote as insight standpoint or even remotely worth discussing on this show.
Yes, it'll be bland generic question A followed by witty cliche one. Bland generic question B followed by witty cliche number two. You know, like that's how it's possibly going to go down. So we would like it if, You know, we're calling out to all those important MLS executives in the media arm who listen to our podcast to begging you to give us some shtickle of access. Shtickle is Yiddish, everybody. Some shtickle of access beyond just your communications department tossing up cliches for us. Anyhow, we're off topic, but that's what I think of the group. I think Sporting Kansas City, if I were to handicap the group off the bat, I would say the Rapids are the likely top of the group. RSL are likely number two, Sporting with the three, and Minnesota bringing up the rear. Matt, where would you be at?
I mean, I just, like I said at the top of this discussion, I think this is the toughest group other than, I'd say group A, I'd probably have to go through. And once I know the schedule, just because that's not even because there's six teams and everybody's only playing three games. Like, this is the toughest one for me to handicap. I think you could, like I said, other than RSL, for me at least, I think you can make a legitimate argument of any one of these four teams finishing at the top. And I think you could, maybe not an argument for every team finishing bottom of the group, but I think there's a solid argument for every single team not making out. We should also point out, dear listeners, that it's not just with the format of the tournament, it's not just the top two teams that will advance to the knockout rounds, but then it's the next four. It's all of the group winners and then the group second place teams. That'll get us to 12 of the 16. And then it's the next, then it's the four best third place teams as well. So I think if I had to pick as far as like, you know, this could be a group mark where like no team has more than 6 points and then no team has fewer than four. So if I did have to do a guarantee on what groups do I see definitely having one of the best third teams coming out of it, I would definitely pick group D. And so in that regard, not that I'm a betting man or that there's even any betting agencies open on this, I do like the Rapids opportunity to qualify for the knockout round. But I mean, I just, like I said, handicapping this tournament in general is almost impossible. And it's almost journalistically irresponsible for me to, you know, feign speculation off as knowledge because we don't know what half of these teams have been doing for the last 3 months. But also just the question mark that I think the group is extremely even. And I don't think we're going to have a good idea of what these teams actually look like until, you know, close to midnight on Sunday, July 12th, just looking after everybody's played a game. And it's like, you know, like we've seen with the Bundesliga, like we've seen with the Premier League in terms of just like Arsenal wasn't ready to go. Like the, you know, the relegation teams are pretty much relegation fodder. And, you know, clearly Bayern Munich knew that they were going to come out and just if they took care of business, they were going to win the tournament. And other than Weston McKennie, like Schalke didn't take care of things. So we're going to find out. It's going to become very, very obvious, I think, certainly through the first, certainly after the second game, of what teams took this seriously from a fitness standpoint, who, whether it's the fitness ed people, the head coach from managing things, were able to handle things, and then what organizations weren't able to do of their own volition, or in the case of like San Jose Earthquakes, for example, they're at the point where they're just now starting to get into actual team activities, and they're actually, I think, I heard from one of my friends who covers San Jose that they're actually flying to Orlando this weekend so they can actually get in market because it's going to be easier logistically for them to do full team trainings in Orlando than it will be in San Jose. So after accounting for that, I mean, I have no idea what's going to happen. None of it's going to make sense. It's going to be chaos. And listeners, we here at Holding the High Line are going to do our best to make sense of it as we go through. And if it ends up being that the Rapids end up winning the group but then getting 10 positive tests, we're going to be here to complain about it and certainly tweet angrily at Don Garber because of it.
I don't think we could wrap it up any better than that. Our sponsors are Roughneck Scarves, purveyors and manufacturers of the most beautiful custom-made scarves you could ever get. Get them for your U4 team, all the way up to your senior over 75 men's league, barely keeping it together, falling over after 15 minutes, soccer league. It's a great thing to do. Go get yourself a Roughneck scarf. Maybe as a graduation present for that person who didn't actually have a graduation because COVID-19. And then our other sponsor is Icarus FC, kits. Custom made, custom colors, custom designs, all sorts of cool stuff. Do you like Marvel? Do you want a Spider-Man kit? Would you like a Black Panther uniform? Would you want, your goalkeeper to look like Captain America? You can do it without potentially violating any copyright infringement if you're careful enough. So go ahead, check out Icarus FC. Always fun. Thanks a lot for being our sponsor.
Also pointing out, Roughneck Scarves came out with neck gaiters as well, Mark. So in addition to them doing the non-medical masks with MLS licensing and then also customizability, they're now doing similar things with neck gaiters. If you not only want to cover your face and nose, but also want 360-degree coverage of your neck as you're starting to go out, I don't know, hiking the mountains that are clearly the Rocky Mountains and not the Wasatch Mountains. All right. Listeners, follow us individually on Twitter at @soccer_rabbi, at @LWSMattPollard. Check out our written musings, Rapids related or otherwise, at American Soccer Analysis and LastWordOnSoccer.com. Follow the podcast on the Twitter machine at Rapids96Podcast. Email us your questions using the hashtag AskHTHL, and if, you know, we'll answer them on the show. If you want to get in touch in more than 280 characters, hit us up at Rapids96Podcast@gmail.com. Also check out DenverPost.com/HTHL and Patreon.com/Rapids96Podcast if we continue to bring monetary value to your lives. Last thing that I want to say, if you have not listened to it, folks, the interview that I did over the weekend and released yesterday with Rick Guter, the head athletic trainer for the Colorado Rapids, was absolutely fantastic. If you want some fun MLS 1.0 stories, some fun stories on both the U.S. women's and the U.S. women's and men's national team playing in World Cups and what Rick is doing to help the Rapids be at their best and succeed on the field now and in the near future, absolutely recommend in that interview, like a lot of guests that we've had on with the club. Fantastic person, fantastic professional, and really great education and insight into what they do professionally and ultimately how it's happening, how it's going to help the Burgundy Boys achieve their goals on the pitch. All right, listeners, we'll see you next week with a massive preview pod of the various groups, group opponents that the Rapids have as we look forward to the MLS's back Biodome, Thunderdome, or Land Doom tournament.
Peace!